Lieutenant Irk Harmon paused in his work. Cool air came through the tiny hole he'd been able to cut in the rock. Through it, he could see the stars. "We're going to make it, Odie." He sank into a sitting position and removed the tunic that had been covering his arm and hand. "Shine some light on my arm, would you?" Recon Trooper Odie Subu gasped. "It's covered in blisters. I have a first aid pack on my belt." She fumbled with some pouches and applied a dressing to Irk's wounds. "Let me do some of the cutting now. You rest a while." "All right. But let's both take a break for a minute. Let some of this hot air dissipate." They lay there, resting for several minutes. And then she donned his tunic and began cutting away at the rock. She worked steadily for 10 minutes. "Do you hear that?" Irk asked. The roar of the artillery came to the pair inside the ruins of their bunker, somewhat muffled, but still gloriously loud enough to tell them that a major attack was underway. "We've been relieved?" Odie whispered. They listened in the darkness. "It's either a relief force or the final assault," Irk said at last. "Either way, we're getting out of here." They entered the jumble of boulders. The rocks loomed over them like tall buildings. It was so quiet, they could hear one another breathing. Sergeant Lalak signaled a halt. From far ahead, off to the left a bit and above them, they heard faint metallic sounds. Nobody needed to be told it was battle droids moving about. But how many? What were the fortifications like? Did they have heavy weapons? What would be the best way to attack them? Through his night vision goggles, Lalak could make out a small open space between the rocks. He stepped into it, followed by Grudo. A droid stood up, just to the sergeant's left, and before Lalak could react, Grudo drew a vibroblade from his equipment belt and took the thing's head off with one swift, clean blow. Lalak continued to lead the way carefully across the clearing. On the other side, he crouched down and indicated that they should gather about him in a tight circle. "Good work, Grudo." He punched the Rodian lightly on the shoulder. "Now listen up. I go on from here alone. It's 0300 hours now. First light is at 0600. Give me 1 hour. If I'm not back by then, leave me."
"No way," Private Vic whispered. "We came in together, and we'll all go out together, or not at all."
Lalak leaned close to the guard and whispered, "That's an order. If they get me, they'll get you too if you hang around. You all know how to follow orders, so follow." He vanished into the dark. The minutes dragged by. Grudo felt at home now, with other soldiers on a dangerous mission, death or glory just a few meters away. It was what he lived for. He thought of Anakin, whom he'd come to love during the time they'd worked together. There was something about the young Jedi that Grudo had recognized the first time they'd met in that sleazy bar in Coruscant. He'd been unable to pin it down at the time, but subsequently, he'd recognized it as the ability to get others to follow him. In the darkness beyond, Lalak climbed up the reverse slope of the nethermost hill. The going was surprisingly easy. Cautiously, he peered over some rocks into the rear of the enemy defenses. Just 10 meters to his left, no more, a group of battle droids huddled behind a hastily constructed rock wall. In his night vision device, they appeared as tiny glowing dots, the infrared signatures of their power cells and circuitry. As he watched, there was a small but bright flash from one of the droids, and then it disappeared from his vision to be replaced by a fast-fading glow. Lalak smiled. The thing had just had a short circuit. Delightful. They weren't being properly maintained. Good to know. Slowly, he scanned the line. As he examined the position closely, his heart began to race in his chest. This was it. This was the weak spot. The line could be turned at this point. He had to get this information back to headquarters. He crept back down the slope, expecting every moment to be subjected to blaster fire, but none came. In a few minutes, he was back at the rocks, crouching down with his three companions. "We're ready to go back in," he whispered. "And boy, do I have some intelligence." He withdrew his communicator and gave the signal they were ready to return. "While we're waiting for the all clear, I've got to tell you what I saw up there. You won't believe this, but they...
Two battle droids came clattering into the little clearing between the rocks. Vic drew his blaster, and kneeling, destroyed them both with two quick shots.
Run! Run!
Lalak screamed.
I'll stay here and slow them down, Vic yelled back.
The other three ran between the boulders. A flurry of blaster bolts flashed in the night behind them. Vic came running out from between the rocks.
Too many of them,
he shouted as he skittered past Grudo. Calmly, Grudo unholstered his blaster and drew his vibroblade with the other hand. As the droids came charging at him from between the rocks, he cut one down with his blaster and slashed through the neck cables of another with his blade. In 10 seconds, he lay six of them low, forming a small obstacle the others had to clamber over to get at him. He stood calmly firing into the charging droids. He piled the droids up. 30 seconds into the fight, there were no more droids to shoot at. Grudo stood panting for a moment. He holstered his blaster. Dead silence. No. Up ahead, more droids were coming down from the hills. It was time to go. He turned and raced back in the direction of his comrades. At that point, the artillery opened up again, and the night turned to bedlam. Odie stuck her head out of the hole she had cut in the rock.
A few more minutes, and I think I can get through.
After the rock around the edge of the hole cooled sufficiently, Odie lifted herself up to the rim. Urk gave her a boost from below, and she was out. The barrage started up again at that very moment. She slid back into the bunker. Do you think we should go out there in this? Who cares? Anything is better than another second in this tomb. Use your good arm to hoist yourself up, and I'll boost you from below. But be careful. It might be a tight fit. He managed to pull himself halfway through the hole, then got stuck. He grunted in pain. Odie grabbed his feet from below and with all her strength shoved him out into the clear. She tossed up her blaster rifle and followed him. They lay in the rubble, gasping for breath.
We made it.
Figures emerged out of the dark. Odie grabbed her blaster and fired a shot.
Don't shoot!
One of the figures shouted.
We're friends!
Someone rushed up to Odie and slapped her blaster out of the way.
Blast you!
He shouted.
You shot one of my troopers, you fool!
He looked at her in the strobing light of the barrage, then at Urk, lying on his back beside her.
Hey, who are you anyway?
Grudo shot real bad, Corporal Raider said. She hit him in the side of his head.
Blast you people!
Lalox knelt beside Grudo. The side of the Rodian's head gave to his probing fingers, but he was still conscious.
Let's wait for the ARC troopers, Raider suggested. They can help us carry him back to the aid station.
If we don't get him back right now, he won't make it.
And after what he's done this night, we're not waiting. You two,
Lalak said, indicating Odie and Urk.
Give us a hand.
Hey, I know you two. You're from General Kamar's army. I found you two out in the desert.
Sergeant Lalox,
Odie gasped.
I remember now,
Lalox said.
They sent you up to Isabel after we came in together.
Well, I'll be.
Sergeant, let's get moving. We can talk when we get back to our lines,
Raider suggested. Sergeant Lalox came to attention and saluted Halcyon.
Make your report, Sergeant.
We didn't wait for the other teams to come in, sir, because I had two wounded and had to get them to the aid station. Their right flank is vulnerable, sir.
He moved to a three-dimensional display.
First, this hill on the far end of the line is only lightly defended. Second, I didn't see any crew-served weapons up there. They haven't brought in artillery. And finally, I have reason to believe lack of maintenance might be reducing the droid fighting force. We put them through some exercises, and they'll lose combat strength through breakdowns.
Who was wounded? Anakin asked.
I'm afraid the Rodian, sir.
How badly?
Very badly, sir. But let me add this. We wouldn't have made it back with this information if it hadn't been for him.
Well, who's the other wounded trooper, then?
Slake asked. Briefly, Lalox explained about Odie and Urk.
I remember them. She went to Isabel with the lieutenant, Slake said.
She's the one who shot Grudo, Lalox told Anakin. In the dark and the confusion, she thought we were the enemy. It happened, sir. Friendly fire.
Very well, then. Halcyon had made his decision. It's 0400 hours now. Commander Skywalker, at 0600, I want you in position to attack that right flank. Use Sergeant Lalox as your guide. Take two brigades of your division. Leave the third in reserve under the command of Captain Slake.
Shouldn't we wait for the commandos to report, sir?
Halcyon's operations officer asked. I'll be interested to hear what they've found out, but no. This, he pointed to the display, is the pivotal point in our assault, and we'll attack there. I'll take my division and attack the center. I'll wait until you're in place before I commence my attack, Commander Skywalker. You wait 10 minutes after I move forward before moving in.
Grudo was lying on a field litter behind some curtains. Anakin caught his breath when he saw how grievously the Rodian had been wounded.
Can he talk? Anakin asked the harried doctor.
He's been muttering something. Whether it's in his own language or just moaning, I don't know. It's astonishing that he's even semi-conscious with a wound like that.
There's nothing you can do, doctor?
The surgeon shook his head.
No, he's just too far gone. We can't even give him a sedative, unless, of course, you want me to end his misery.
Anakin turned on him.
If I ever again hear you say something like that about one of my troopers, I swear.
He shook his head. Now have the courtesy to leave me alone with my friend.
The doctor blanched, parted the curtains, and disappeared.
Anakin looked down at Grudo.
Can you hear me?
Grudo opened his one good eye.
Anakin, save your strength. You're going to be just fine. No. Time to go.
No, Grudo. They're sending you to the respite, a fine hospital ship where they have everything they need to help you.
With great effort, Grudo raised himself up on an elbow and with his free hand gripped the young Jedi by the shoulder. He brought his ruined face close to Anakin's.
Don't cry over me, he said,
then fell back on the cot. Anakin didn't need to touch Grudo to know the life force had left him. He sat by his side for several minutes, then stood and returned to the command post. There would be an attack in the morning, and he would lead it. Grudo would be avenged.
We don't have much time, Anakin informed his commanders. So here's the plan of attack. He called up a huge three-dimensional view of the battlefield. The focus of our attack is this hill. Note the jumble of huge rocks at its base. They'll serve as cover for our infantry, and we'll mount our assault from there. The key is to get across this plain as quickly as possible, because there we'll be in full view of the enemy on the mesa. General Halcyon's full divisional attack on the center will draw troops away from the flanks to meet it and weaken their positions elsewhere, in particular, here on this hill, which we know from last night's recon is only lightly defended by infantry droids with no artillery. Once we occupy that hill, we'll enfilade the entire enemy position. 1st Brigade will occupy the hill, while 2nd Brigade will sweep around to the rear of the positions. We'll be attacking from three directions simultaneously. We will be preceded by clone commandos, led by an ARC trooper, who will infiltrate the position on this hill and cause a diversion. Under cover of that diversion, we will attack in strength. Now, as I said, it's vital we get across that plain quickly. We will be preceded by a battalion of crawlers that will lay down suppressing fire on the hilltop. Our infantry will follow in their armored transports. We'll use this dry riverbed to get into position. That will provide us cover until we're ready to attack across the plain. We won't mount our own attack until General Halcyon's division is fully engaged. Fire and maneuver all the way across, but move your soldiers quickly. I cannot overemphasize speed. You will be under direct observation until you get to these rocks. You will be supported by artillery all the way, and it will continue to pound the enemy positions as you go up the hill. But as you can see, these rocks make the approach to this hill impossible for vehicles of any kind. So this phase of the operation will have to be accomplished on foot.
This will be an infantry soldier's fight. Anakin's commanders stood in full battle gear. Their troops had been assembled for the attack some time before and were waiting for their orders. He turned to the ARC captain in charge of his clone commandos. You will depart immediately, Captain, and go in first. I want you to penetrate the enemy position and raise havoc up there. As soon as you're in, we'll follow. Remember, all of this starts 10 minutes after General Halcyon commences his attack on the center of the enemy's positions. Everything we do must be coordinated to the second. That's it. You've all been assigned your sectors and objectives. Return to your units and brief your subordinates. We jump off in 30 minutes. Sir, one of the two brigade commanders said, who will be battlefield tactical commander? I will, Anakin replied. At the surprised silence that met his words, he straightened his shoulders and silently reminded himself to relax and remember Grudo's lessons. First of all, I don't believe in ordering someone else to anything I'm not willing to do myself. Second, if any mistakes are made this morning, I'm responsible, whether or not I'm there with you, so I may as well be there. And finally, you can't lead from behind. All right, let's get going. Dismissed.
A credit for your thoughts, Jedi.
Anakin whirled to see Slake standing there, a big grin on his face. I was just thinking.
Thinking is dangerous for a commander.
Slake laughed.
See where it's gotten me?
He paused.
You're going to lead the attack personally, I hear.
Yes, sir. Slake nodded and held out his hand.
You'll do just fine. I wish I could go with you, but we're being held in reserve. I've had a talk with your 3rd Brigade commander, and we have an understanding. I'll hand it all back to you when this is over. I'll be hanging around here during the attack, keeping an eye on Halcyon. Don't worry, he added with a good-natured laugh. I won't let him goof things up. Well, good luck, Commander.
They shook hands, and then Slake took 2 steps back, came to attention, and saluted Anakin. Anakin's assault force hugged the far bank of the dry riverbed, stretched out for nearly 0.5 kilometer along the ancient stream. First light would be at precisely 0603, Presetlin time. It was now 0600. He sat at the communications console in his command transport. This is Unit 6, he said. Mark the time, 3 minutes and counting, he advised his commanders. He turned and grinned at the transport's commander, a clone sergeant. We have 2 minutes, Sergeant. As soon as the transport column goes over the top of the bank onto the plane, I want you to swing around on the flank, climb the bank, and park there so I can supervise the movements of my units.
Yes, sir,
the sergeant answered. The worst part is to come, Anakin said. We have to wait a full 10 minutes after the attack. He cocked his head.
There it goes, he whispered,
as Halcyon's preparatory artillery fires commenced. Within seconds, concussions from the dozens of guns of all types reached them inside the armor of the tank droid. They could feel the pressure of the firing in their eardrums. Last night, the barrages ordered to cover the reconnaissance had been spectacular displays. But this morning, the soldiers were right underneath the guns' trajectories, and the noise was tremendous, especially when the enemy's own artillery opened fire on Halcyon's advancing troops.
They're really catching it up there, one of the gunners commented.
Over the command net, they listened with rising anxiety to the cacophony of commanders' voices as Halcyon's troops dashed across the plain under the enemy's devastating fire. Someone in a transport screamed. Switch to the tactical net, Anakin ordered. The minutes dragged by. At precisely 0613, the vehicle battalion commander's vehicle roared over the bank, followed by scores of Republic transports.
Get me up there right now!
Anakin ordered his driver, and the tank droid shot forward. The first dozen or so transports over the bank succeeded in cutting a deep furrow in the soil, and the rut deepened as more followed. This was planned for and would give the following troop transports cover as they negotiated the bank, as well as an easy path to follow. But Anakin's vehicle surged over a bit to one side of the beaten path, and the going was very rough for the clones inside.
Stop here,
Anakin ordered. He climbed into the commander's cupola.
Sir,
the sergeant protested,
You're exposed.
Anakin toggled his throat mic. Better to see from up here.
We should keep moving, sir. We're too good a target stopped like this.
Don't worry. The law of averages is with us. This is a target-rich environment. The sight that greeted Anakin's eyes would never leave him. The entire plain was full of moving vehicles, huge clouds of dust and smoke, and burning fires. Ahead, his own transports were making good headway so far. The battalion commander had positioned several machines along the route of attack, and they were already taking the distant hilltop under fire with their guns. The others were firing as they moved.
Get ready, Anakin told the transport commander, waiting patiently in the riverbed for the signal to start advancing. Suddenly, a dozen or more enemy tank droids surged forward out of a depression in the ground, guns blazing. Two of Anakin's vehicles were hit immediately. One was the battalion commander's vehicle. It started burning. No one tried to get out.
Unit 6 is taking over, Anakin announced on the command net. Concentrate your fire on those tank droids.
Blaster cannon bolts flashed overhead from the enemy vehicles, bouncing off the ground and into the air over them, making sizzling noises as they passed. Anakin smiled. The Separatists had begun their counterattack too soon. Odian Urk sat in the aid station, listening to the thunder of the guns supporting Halcyon's attack. The assault had been going on for 10 or 15 minutes before the chief surgeon accosted them.
You can walk now, Lieutenant, so shove off, he told Urk. I'll need all the space I can get in this station in the next few minutes.
Odie, who'd been keeping Urk company while he was in the aid station, helped him to his feet.
Doctor, when will you be able to see him again? She asked.
I don't know, the surgeon replied. Here.
He grabbed a med pack and shoved it at Odie.
Everything you need is in there, including painkillers. Hear those blasters? I want you out of the way before the casualties start streaming in here. Now go!
Let's head over to the command post, Urk said. Maybe we can be of some help there. The attack wasn't going as planned. As the first wave of the assault breached the mesa, the enemy troops had pulled back to prepared positions. The attackers were exposed to raking fire as they tried to close the gap. Nervously, Halcyon paced back and forth in the command post. Slake sat unperturbed a few steps away, eyes glued to the battlefield monitors, listening intently to the reports coming in from the attacking units.
They're pinned down on the mesa, Halcyon observed. Anakin hasn't been able to take those hills.
The last word we had from him, sir, an operations officer responded, was that he was taking over the transport battalion. I don't even know if the infantry has been deployed to take the hill.
Casualties.
We've several hundred so far, sir,
the division surgeon replied.
More coming in every minute.
May I have your permission to go to the aid station and help out? Halcyon nodded, and the surgeon hurried out. Halcyon came over and sat down beside Slake.
Our attacks have failed, he admitted.
He smashed a fist into one hand to express his anxiety.
Somehow they stymied Anakin. His taking those hills was the key to our whole plan.
I'm going to withdraw the troops. Anakin may have succeeded in taking his objective, Slake reasoned.
No, he hasn't. He's alive and still fighting, but not on the hills. We need to reassess the situation and try something else.
I knew before we started, if we couldn't crack that line within 20 minutes, we'd never break it the way we'd planned.
Now you know what it's like to command an army like this, Slake said. My troopers are ready. Give me the word and we'll support you wherever you need us. But I agree. I think we need to revise our battle plan.
As soon as our troops begin their retrograde movement, move yours to the old riverbed. Establish a defensive line. It'll be tricky, our attackers passing back through your brigade, but you can handle that. Entrench there and prepare for a counterattack.
Where are you going?
He asked Slake, who had gotten up.
To lead my troops.
What are you doing here?
A harried staff officer demanded when he saw two strangers standing in the command center.
We just came from the aid station, sir, Lieutenant Urk Harmon answered.
Well, get back over there, then. We don't need any hangers-on.
He's wounded, sir, said recon trooper Odie Subu, and I've been assigned to look after him. She displayed the med pack the surgeon had given her.
We thought we could help out here.
At that point, Zoe's rider Slake happened to walk by.
Well, well, if it isn't my prodigal twins. Look, it's going to get real busy here in a minute, and I've got to go fire up my commanders, Slake told them. Why don't you two go down to the fire direction center? See Colonel Gris Manx, my artillery commander. He's big, you can't miss him. Tell him I sent you. See if he can use a hand.
The fire direction center was literally down, accessed by a sloping tunnel that labor droids had constructed under the supervision of Halcyon's engineers. The FDC itself was large and crammed with equipment that enabled the dozens of experts who staffed the place to communicate directly with the two divisional artillery headquarters and through them to coordinate and give missions to every single piece of artillery in the army. When the pair entered the FDC, Gris Manx was shouting loudly at a clone sergeant. He saw the newly arrived pair in his peripheral vision and whirled on them.
Who are you?
He demanded. Captain Slake sent us to help out, Urk answered.
Help out? You too? Lieutenant, you look all shot up. And you, Trooper, you look all shot down. How can you help me?
Sir, I'm the one who was shot down, Urk answered. And burned up, too. The Trooper is my wingmate. He explained briefly how they'd gotten to the FDC. Colonel Manx stared at the two in disbelief.
All right, the captain sent you? All right then, you two go over there. Keep out of the way, and keep your eyes and ears open, and you might learn something.
The smoke and fires and the dust were so thick that the transport's infras couldn't penetrate it. The onboard radar was no longer effective at picking out targets, because the debris and fragments from exploding vehicles filled the air in a raging cauldron of destruction. It had become almost impossible to know if one was firing on friend or foe. Get us out of here, Anakin ordered his driver. I've got to see what's going on and get those transports moving. My troopers are up there without infantry support. Move! Move! Suddenly, Anakin's vehicle was rammed in the rear by another vehicle. Everyone pitched forward in their harnesses, and the transport came to a stop. In that instant, a bolt from a laser cannon struck the machine on the flank and drilled through into the crew compartment, which immediately burst into flames. Without even thinking about it, Anakin reached down with one arm and grabbed the driver by the bottom of his backplate. With the other, he sent a force push that flung the cupola hatch open. The driver released his harness and kicked with his feet as Anakin hauled him out of his seat, up into the cupola, and over the side. They landed in a heap beside the transport, which began to billow greasy black smoke, followed by a brilliant and intensely hot white flame that shot at least 10 meters into the air. No one else made it out. Dragging the driver, Anakin stumbled toward cover. He hadn't made it more than a few meters when another vehicle roared by, missing them by millimeters, almost knocking them down in its passing and nearly suffocating them in the thick cloud of dust that billowed behind it. Anakin flung himself and the driver into a shallow depression. All around them, vehicles roared and churned, their guns flashing.
We've got to get out of here, Anakin said, digging himself out of the dirt. This way, he ordered.
The driver followed him. They came to a transport that had stopped and was firing repeatedly at targets they couldn't see. Anakin recognized the faint markings stenciled on the front armor plate.
It was one of his.
He switched to his command net. Oryk Trill 6 Niner Slant Kresh, this is Unit 6. Open up. I'm taking you as my command vehicle. There was no response. He reached for the small hatch that held a receiver transmitter hooked into the vehicle's onboard communication system, when suddenly it lurched forward, entangling the hem of his cloak in the track mechanism, jerking him off his feet and dragging him along. He was just millimeters from being pulled under the vehicle's treads when his driver leapt forward and severed his cloak with a vibroblade.
Thanks. That was close,
Anakin gasped as the driver helped him to his feet.
Come on. We'll have to get back to the transports on foot. They aren't far. Follow me.
They ran. Anakin had to hold himself back.
The driver was well-trained and in good shape, but even so, he couldn't match a Jedi at top speed. Anakin's blood pounded in his veins as he willed himself to keep his speed down a fraction, when everything in him roared a single message: run! But in a few seconds that felt like an eternity, he found himself in the rut the transport had made. The transports were there. He ran to the first one in line. Its hatch was open, and its commander stood in it with his armored head and torso half out of the vehicle. With an easy force leap, Anakin bounded onto the vehicle's dorsal surface, surprising the clone commander, who drew his weapon, thinking he must be an enemy soldier. Anakin seized the clone's arm. "I'm Commander Skywalker," he said urgently. "Get down inside. I'm taking this as my command vehicle." The clone commander obeyed. Reaching down to pull his driver up behind him, Anakin climbed in. Porz Toneth watched as the battle unfolded. He sipped from his teacup. Excellent. The enemy attack was proceeding just as he had anticipated. The attacks on his right and center were faltering, and the thrust toward the hills was being slowed by the crawler attack. They would have a big surprise when they reached the foot of those hills. "Are you ready?" he asked a technician.
"Yes, sir. We've penetrated the communications net. We have the commander's call sign, his voice print, and his authentication code. We are capable of issuing orders to all his troops."
"Good. Stand by."
Toneth could now issue bogus orders to all of Halcyon's units to retreat or attack or stand still. But he wanted something more spectacular, and he was going to get it. He smiled.
"Give me your comlink," Anakin demanded of the battalion commander, ripping his own off and throwing it out through the hatch. "This is Unit 6. I am in the lead transport. On my command, follow me."
He climbed back up into the vehicle's hatch.
"Move this thing as quickly as you can. Listen carefully. I'll be giving you directions."
He toggled to the command net.
"All eyes on me. Follow my light."
With that, he drew his lightsaber, activated it, and held it straight up in the air. He swept his arm forward. The vehicle lurched into the ramp and surged up onto the plain above, followed by a long line of transports.
"Hard left," he ordered,
and the transport swerved to the left, just in time to miss one roaring across in front.
"Faster, straight ahead, right, left, open this thing up."
Laser and blaster bolts sizzled through the air. Anakin effortlessly batted them out of the way. Behind him, some of the transports were hit and slowed to a stop, but the following vehicles sped around them, keeping Anakin's lightsaber in view. It was the only thing anyone could see at any distance in the dense dust and smoke hanging over the battlefield. In a matter of seconds, they reached the rocks at the bottom of their objective.
"Dismount. Form up battalions and follow me."
Anakin climbed out of the hatch and leapt to the ground. This was a maneuver the clones had practiced to perfection in countless training exercises. Squads, platoons, companies, and battalions rapidly took their prearranged positions, closing their ranks to cover the gaps left in their formations by the transports that had been hit on the way in. The surviving vehicles rolled up and began to lay down suppressing fire on the hilltop.
"Give us supporting fires,"
Anakin demanded of the fire direction center.
"Copy that,"
a voice echoed in Anakin's headset.
"Time on target, 5 seconds.
Anakin counted. 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, 1005, and mortar rounds began exploding on the hilltop. It was a very satisfying display of firepower. He let the barrage continue as he took his place at the head of the lead battalion. He turned to the battalion commander. "That'll keep them down. Nobody can survive under that pounding."
"I wouldn't be too sure, sir," the commander said.
Anakin looked at the officer disbelievingly, but just shrugged.
"We advance on your order, sir," the battalion commander said. "I advise that you stay here with the reserves until we've secured the hill."
Anakin hesitated only briefly before making his decision.
"Colonel, take that hill."
He pointed at the hill that rose above the boulder-strewn field. The battalion advanced by companies, the commander and his staff immediately behind the first company. The field of boulders forced the clone infantry to bunch up to get through to the slope on the other side, and this made everyone exceptionally nervous.
Quickly! Quickly!
The battalion commander urged his troops, keeping his eye on the hilltop, which remained strangely silent.
What are they waiting for?
From just ahead came the sharp cracking of blaster rifles.
Droid skirmishers,
the lead company commander reported. We're brushing them aside. The battalion commander heard only a very sharp crack when the mine went off, the instantaneous result of the concussion bursting his eardrums. He felt himself lifted off his feet and flung backward in a cloud of smoke, dust, shattered armor and body parts. He slammed into a boulder and bounced off onto the ground. He felt no pain, just a dullness in his legs and back. He shook his head to clear it, but no good. He tried to get to his feet, but couldn't. His legs had been severed just below the knees. He knew this because he could rise up on his elbows just enough to see that he had no feet. The battle droids, rank upon serried rank, sat motionless in their bunkers. Their control systems were active, weapon systems charged, waiting for the command to attack. Only moments before, they had been ordered to take cover in the bunker complex to avoid the mortar barrage that began falling on their now unoccupied positions. Labor droids had improved and deepened the bunkers the previous night, so now they were impervious to the heavy mortar shells exploding in huge gouts of flame all over the hill. Not 30 minutes before, clone troopers had tried to penetrate their perimeter, but the droids had been ready for them. Now they sat safely in the bunkers, just waiting. The enemy infantry was approaching now, just as the Admiral had said they would. The droid skirmishers were taking the leading units under fire. In a matter of seconds, the huge mine, laid in the remains of the blown tunnel to Isabel, would be detonated, and then the droids would be given the command to spring into action and deliver a withering fire on the survivors. A controller sat with the detonating device in his hand, watching a monitor. As soon as the lead elements of the attacking force were bunched up between the rocks, he would explode the mine. The monitor went dead suddenly. No matter. He knew where the advancing infantry was. He counted. 1, 2, 3, 4. He pushed the detonator button. The explosion threw Anakin to the ground. Ahead, where the lead company had just disappeared into the rocks, was a huge pall of smoke. The air was filled with dirt clods and rock fragments from boulders that had been shattered by the blast. Anakin leapt to his feet and ran forward. The sight that met him was straight out of a nightmare. Almost all the clone troopers in the lead company had been injured or killed outright in the blast. The wounded staggered about in a daze, their armor covered in blood. Many were missing body parts. The ground was littered with corpses and the dying. Those not wounded physically were in a state of shock, weaponless, disoriented.
Second company up!
Anakin ordered over the tactical net.
Second and third battalions up! Follow me!
He ran through the carnage to the foot of the hill, drew his lightsaber, and activated it. He raised it over his head.
Form up on me! I lead the way!
The remaining two companies of the 1st Battalion quickly recovered their wits and surged on through the rocks to where Anakin stood on the slope of the hill. By that time, the rest of the transports had come up and were disgorging their troops. Send them in now, Anakin ordered the brigade commanders, who immediately formed their regiments. There was still no fire from the hilltop. Good. The artillery was keeping them down. Thousands of clone troopers swarmed onto the foot of the hill and paused, waiting for the order to rush to the top. At that moment, their own artillery started falling on the transports.
Adjust your fire at 100-meter intervals. Roll back toward our lines. Pass this order to all units,
Colonel Grismanx called out.
The assault is being called off, and we must cover our retreating troops.
Sir,
one of the fire direction center operators called out, I believe the troops on the right flank are just now assaulting the hill. If we adjust 100 meters to the rear, the rounds will fall on our own.
Your information must be wrong. Adjust for rolling fires. I just got that order directly from General Halcyon. Received and authenticated. Order all pieces to target the plane according to our pre-registered fire plan and support our line in case of counterattack.
The FDC directors dutifully passed on the order, and the blasters adjusted their fires accordingly. Irk and Odie jumped to their feet. To Anakin, standing at the foot of the hill, the blaster assault from the top began as a bright, flashing row of fire from so many weapons that it was difficult to pick out the individual shooters. A wave of destruction rolled over the soldiers gathered around him. Without even thinking, he used his lightsaber to divert several bolts aimed directly at him. Troopers standing to his right and left were not so fortunate and were cut down in droves.
Forward!
Anakin shouted and started up the hill. The companies, battalions, and regiments rolled forward behind him, firing and maneuvering as they went. But the line faltered under the devastating fire from the top of the hill, then stopped as casualties mounted and the survivors went to ground, seeking whatever cover the terrain offered from the destruction pouring onto them from above.
Put artillery on that hill!
Anakin ordered over the command net, forgetting the proper comm procedure in his excitement.
This is Commander Skywalker. Give us back that artillery support. You're dropping rounds on our transports. Readjust your fire. We're being slaughtered down here. We are pinned down. Repeat, we are pinned down. Over.
The fire from the droids only intensified. Few of the clone troopers were able to return it. Frustrated, Anakin toggled to Halcyon's command net.
General Halcyon, this is Anakin. What's going on?
I'm pinned down here. My own artillery is firing on my rear, and the enemy in my front is killing us.
Halcyon started when he heard Anakin's voice booming over the loudspeakers in the command post, and everyone stopped what he or she was doing. Anakin, hold on. He turned to his artillery liaison. Get me Colonel Manx.
You gave me that order just a little while ago,
Manx said when Halcyon asked what was happening.
Adjust fires at 100-meter intervals to cover our retreating troops.
Our net has been compromised, an officer gasped. You gave no such order.
He looked at Halcyon.
Colonel, cover the retreat on the left, but put fire on that hill on the right immediately. Anakin, as soon as the mortars start up again, get out of there. I'm calling off the attack.
When the mortars again started falling on the hilltop, it was too late to do any damage to the droids. They'd already retreated into their bunkers.
Your status, Tarneth?
It was that detestable Commander Ventress again. Poor's Tarneth put down his teacup.
You are calling at an inconvenient time, he sneered. I am in the process of beating back a major attack.
Yes, you look extremely busy, as you always do. Have you been successful, then?
Entirely, Tarneth answered smugly.
Casualties?
Ours? Light. Theirs? I haven't assessed them yet, but heavy. Very heavy indeed. You see, I was able to anticipate their moves perfectly.
Count Dooku will be pleased,
Ventress interrupted.
I am sure this confirms his faith in my ability to command this situation and save it, he said, leaning back and grinning at the hologram image hovering before him.
You shall be reinforced shortly. The fleet is on the way.
Tarneth only nodded.
I may not even need them. I believe I'm faced by second-rate brains. Frontal attacks, flanking movements, Jedi running about with their lightsabers? Pish! It's firepower and tactics that count, not heroics and posturing.
I shall so inform Count Dooku. One more thing, Tonith. When this is over, we shall meet, and I will kill you.
Anakin, a cold glass of water in his hand, sat in the command post making his report to Halcyon. They were ready for us, Master Halcyon. My initial casualty reports put my losses at over 600 killed, wounded, or missing. Among the missing is the entire team of commandos I sent to pave the way. None of them came back. He sipped his water. Our casualties in the other attack were over 1,000, and we don't know how many of those are missing or dead. Halcyon answered, "We're right back at square one."
"It was a good attack plan," Slake offered. "Well coordinated, well planned, and well executed. Nobody needs to blame himself for what happened out there. Our opponent was ready for us, that's all. We'll have better luck next time."
He had just returned from inspecting the defensive line he'd established at the dry riverbed. He laid a hand on Anakin's shoulder.
"You and the clones fought bravely, Anakin. I'm glad you made it back. There's one bright spot. It's been hours now since our troops returned, and there's been no counterattack. I think that means he doesn't have the resources to mount one."
"We still have to get up there and dislodge him," Halcyon said. "But no more frontal attacks."
"Whoever's in command knows what he's doing," Slake observed. "But no matter how good he is, he's no better than the three of us together. I suggest we call in our fleet and burn him off the mesa."
Everyone within hearing of the trio stopped what he or she was doing and listened to what was being said. They'd all been thinking the same thing. "But I..." Halcyon protested. Slake shook his head.
"I know what you're going to say. We must try to protect the Intergalactic Communications Center and the lives of the surviving technicians. They're being held hostage, that's plain. But it's also plain the Republic doesn't make deals with criminals, which is just what these people are. If we want them off this planet, we'll have to blast them off. The center and the technicians, Raja Momin, all of them, will be collateral losses, is all."
"I've heard friendly fire, and now collateral losses," Anakin said, finishing the last of his water. He ran a hand tiredly across his face. "I'm getting good at recognizing all these euphemisms for death and destruction. And after what the clone troops and I have been through, I think Captain Slake is right. It's just, well, he's right." He nodded at Slake, but refused to look Halcyon in the eye. "The loss of life in this campaign has been terrible. I understand that," Halcyon said slowly. "Captain Slake, you've been hit hardest of all, and I fully understand your desire to end this bloodshed as quickly and as decisively as possible. Anakin, you've been through a terrible experience yourself. You are both brave and capable commanders, and I'm fortunate to have you with me. But understand this. Under no circumstances will we sacrifice the lives of the non-combatants to achieve a quick or a pyrrhic victory." His eyes flashed as he spoke. "Remember, our mission is to save the people and the facility." He sighed. "Now let's get to work and come up with another plan."
Excuse me, sir.
Corporal Raider said from the back of the room, where he stood with Private Vic, Odie, and Irk.
"We were just wondering when you were going to send us into action." "Why not ask them to join us?" Slake suggested, grinning. "You could do worse, asking enlisted people for advice. That woman and the officer with the dressing on his arm, I know these two, and they know the terrain around here better than any of us."
"Why not?" Halcyon responded. "All of you, come up here with us and keep your ears open." "You're the one who shot Grudo," Anakin said as Odie approached.
"Yes, sir. It was a mistake. Friendly fire, not your fault. Happens all the time," Anakin said, not really believing it. He turned to Halcyon.
"When we go back, I want them with me."
Anakin gestured at the two guards.
"Why?"
Halcyon asked. Anakin shrugged.
"I just know I can count on them. They watched your back when you repulsed the boarders and the ranger, and I need someone to watch mine now that my commandos have been wiped out."
Halcyon didn't reply at once or directly. Something had come over the young Jedi, a hardness that hadn't been there before.
Yes, we're going back, Anakin, that's for certain. And we're not going to sit here licking our wounds. He turned to a staff officer. Get those ops people up here and let's get to work.
Mess Bollinger drew himself up to his full shortness, stroked his mustaches, and replied,
Commander, I estimate it requires 2,000 metric tons of materiel and supplies to keep your army running at the level of combat you achieved today. I have stockpiled more than that at our offloading point. But as long as the enemy occupies the high ground, I've only been able to get 1,000 tons a day in here. And that was with an unacceptable loss of transport landing craft, I'm here to tell you. We have enough on hand to mount one more full assault, and then you'll have to fall back and regroup.
The officers around the table considered this information silently. We can't wait for resupply, Anakin said. And there is the chance that enemy reinforcements are on the way. If that happens, the entire balance of power will shift to his advantage.
Agreed. We must attack at once and end this siege, Slake said. What does our fleet commander say?
He turned to Admiral Hopsquatch, commander of the ships in orbit.
We're keeping a sharp eye on the cordon around Sluis Van, Hopsquatch replied. They have made no attempt to interfere with our blockade here, and if they did, we're more than capable of handling them. My concern is the same as yours, Commander Skywalker. The possibility that the Separatists have sent for strong reinforcements from somewhere else.
Halcyon nodded.
It would be very unlike the Separatists to mount an operation like this without a contingency plan to reinforce their army.
What precautions are you taking against the surprise, Admiral?
I have a screen of fast corvettes and cruisers spread out to a distance of 100,000 kilometers in every direction. The crews aboard all my ships are on full alert, half their complements constantly at battle stations.
You?
Halcyon turned to his intelligence officer.
Sir, I've been in touch with Coruscant constantly since we broke the enemy's jamming. All the intelligence services at the Senate's disposal are operating throughout the galaxy. None of them has found any indication that a major force is being assembled to come against us. Halcyon nodded.
Look at this display. He flicked on a three-dimensional graphic of the terrain within 100 kilometers of their position. Reconnaissance shows that the enemy's perimeter is very tightly drawn up there. He shortened his lines to consolidate his assets to better defend a 360-degree perimeter, and he's drawn it in close to the center because he knows how we value it and the lives of the technicians there. That is why, he stated, nodding at his officers, I will not permit the fleet to employ its weapons against him. It would mean complete destruction of everything up there. We can't envelop him vertically. His lines and security are too tight to permit infiltration. We're not going to waste our assets in another frontal assault. And I can't use the fleet's gunnery to dislodge the droids, Halcyon said, summarizing the obvious options.
And he's sitting up there waiting to be reinforced, Slake added.
So what do we do?
Halcyon looked around the table.
I know what to do, Anakin answered, almost in a whisper. No one said anything.
After a moment, Halcyon nodded to Anakin to continue. The young Jedi stood up and looked around the command post.
Give me 15 clone troopers and one transport aircraft. Give me all the cover you can, and I'll fly it right onto the mesa. I won't do it directly. Under the cover of your attack, I'll proceed to the offloading point and then head in this direction, he gestured at the display, and fly about 100 kilometers north to this point, and then dogleg back in this direction, dogleg again, and come in from behind. I'll fly fast and skim just above the ground. I'll land under the cover of your fire, get into the center, and free the remaining hostages. Once that's done and they're safe, let the fleet do the rest. He sat down.
Let me get this straight. A colonel, Halcyon's operations chief, said.
Sir, you propose attacking with 15 clones? Actually, 17 soldiers and one transport aircraft. I'm taking the two guards with me.
17, yes, sir. And with these 17, you expect to break into the center, find the hostages, and evacuate them?
That is correct, Colonel.
It can be done, Slake said,
smashing a fist forcefully into a palm.
It's brilliant.
It'll probably get you killed, but it's brilliant nonetheless.
He grinned at Anakin. You don't even know where they're keeping the hostages, the operations chief pointed out.
Yes, I do, Anakin answered.
How do you know that, sir?
Anakin smiled. Trust me, Colonel. I'm a Jedi, was all he said. The Colonel's face turned red.
You'll need someone who knows his way around in the center, Halsin remarked.
I know my way around there, sir, Odie interjected. I've been in the center many times.
The officers all looked at her, and she nervously shifted her feet.
What were you doing in there? Urk asked.
Well...
She glanced nervously at all the officers.
I knew someone on the defense force, and, we had lunch up there, and...
She shrugged.
I got to know how the center was laid out.
Take her along, Halsin said.
Sir, Urk put in, take two shuttles. You'll need a backup.
Excuse me, sir. I volunteer to fly the second shuttle, Urk said. And if you're taking my wingmate here,
he added, laying his good hand on Odie's shoulder, you've got to take me too.
I insist.
Lieutenants don't insist, Anakin said. They follow orders.
I insist, sir. I know you. I know your reputation.
Well, I'm a fighter pilot, one of the best, and I'm tired of being stuck here on the ground.
Anakin looked intently at Urk for a moment. Then he nodded.
Very well, Halsin shrugged. If nothing else, it'll get all these hangers-on out of my command post and give me room to breathe in here.
When will you leave, Anakin?
As soon as I gear up and we study the layout of the center, sir.
Dondo Foth, captain of the picket frigate Mandian, was a thoroughgoing professional military man who spent most of his time, when he was aboard his vessel on her bridge, alert, tending to the affairs of running a starship. That was one reason his vessel had been picked to patrol the outer rim of the cordon Halsin had thrown around Presidlin. At this time, he was 150,000 kilometers from the orbital fleet, a bit farther out than his orders called for. But acting on his own initiative, he took up his patrol course at that distance. Just in case, he told Lieutenant Commander Vitroth, the Mandian's executive officer. Frankly, I think we should be out a million kilometers, far enough away from the main fleet, that we can give them plenty of warning if anyone tries to sneak up on us.
Captain, the watch officer called,
we've detected an approaching object, 25 degrees to starboard, 300,000 kilometers out, closing slowly.
Sound general quarters, Foth said, turning to his watch officer. Get me a visual. Give me its speed and course. Notify fleet. Blasters, lock on target.
General quarters, sir, the watch officer responded.
Visual, sir. I do not see any other objects out there, Captain.
The rating operating the Mandian's radar suite responded.
Message the fleet, sir, the signals officer responded.
Speed, 21,000.
It's headed directly toward Presidlin, the ship's navigator reported.
Guns locked on target, sir, the gunnery officer announced.
21,000 kilometers an hour? Whatever it is, it's moving slowly.
Where are those visuals?
The screens gradually revealed a shapeless black object, almost a cloud.
Give me more definition, Foth ordered.
Blasted thing doesn't look like a vessel.
Guns, when will it be in range?
At that speed, on my mark, 2 hours, 27 minutes, mark.
Then we wait unless fleet orders us to approach closer.
Do you think it's a cloaked separatist ship?
Foth asked Vitroth.
We have to assume it is, sir.
Sir, fleet message received and authenticated. Maintain your position, observe and report. Fire only if fired on, the signals officer announced.
We're going in fast and we're traveling light, Anakin told his assault force, gathered in a small bunker attached to the command post. The force had grown to include a squad of fully armored clone infantry to go in Urk's ship as security for the transport craft, while they were on the ground inside the center.
Urk, we're going to push those transports at top speed and fly them as close to the ground as we can get. Are you up to that?
Yes, sir.
Getting out of here is going to be a problem. The ships are protected in revetments,
But in order to avoid being hit by enemy gunners, we're going to have to make a dash for it. So everyone, be prepared for a very hard takeoff. I expect to have hard landings too, but we'll talk about that later. Everyone, look at this graphic of the Mesa and memorize as many of the features as you can in the short time we've got. Also, this display. He punched up a floor plan of the main communications building. Trooper Subu, does any of that look familiar?
Yes, sir. This long corridor leads to the main control room.
She used a laser pointer to highlight the area she was talking about.
These side corridors here lead to various other parts of the complex. Here, this leads to the courtyard, where the staff often take their breaks and eat their meals. These rooms are staff quarters. Back here are storage rooms, repair shops. Where are they holding the hostages?
In the main control room. If they move them, I'll know. Everyone look at this. Anakin highlighted an area outside the main building. We are going to land here, among these outbuildings, hopefully screened by them and these trees. We'll go in hard, so everyone be sure to secure yourselves for a rough landing. From there, it's a very short sprint. He pointed to a large doorway. If it's locked, we blow it open. It leads directly down this corridor to the main control room. Hardly any possibility of getting lost on our way to the main control room. It's these side corridors that we should worry about. They offer opportunities for an ambush, so I want to leave one trooper at each intersection to cover them so we can leave our exit route open. You too. He turned to the guards, Raiders and Vic. I want you in the transport with me. Your job will be to patrol that main corridor and back up the troopers who will be watching the side corridors. Shoot anything that's made of metal and moves. We're traveling light, weapons and equipment only. Surprise will be our best weapon. We've got to get in there, take the guards out, and get the hostages to the transports as quickly as possible. If I go down, he will be in charge. Anakin pointed to the ARC sergeant. Lieutenant Harmon, you stay with your transport and the infantry escort. Trooper Subu, you come into the building with me. Your job will be to get the hostages moving and back to the transports. Everyone take a few minutes and study these charts until they're burned into your brains. One more thing. The signal for the fleet to open fire is the common basic word, finished. When that signal is transmitted to General Halcyon, the fleet will open up with its heavy weapons, so we need to be totally clear of that mesa when the signal is given. Anakin leaned forward toward his team. This operation has to come off with split-second timing. Once the enemy realizes we're in the center, he'll kill the hostages. He knows as well as we do that once the hostages are no longer in his power, his lease on life is up. All right. 5 minutes until we mount up. Strapped into the co-pilot's seat, Odie's heart pounded with excitement. She had never traveled this fast over the ground before. Anakin kept the aircraft no more than 15 meters above the ground as it roared along at top speed. He keyed his throat mic. Okay, Irk, we break here. Just follow me. Everyone, get ready. Check your weapons and equipment. 3 minutes to touchdown. The mesa loomed a few kilometers ahead. It glowed and pulsated with artillery fire, both incoming and outgoing. Halston's attack was proceeding. Prepare for landing, Anakin announced on his command net. Irk, sit down next to me. All right, everybody. Here we go. Anakin's landing craft slammed down between two low buildings and stopped in a swirl of dust just in front of a grove of trees. Even before it was stopped, the rear ramp thudded down, and the ARC trooper and clone infantry were out and running for the entrance to the main communications building. All around them, the air hummed and buzzed and cracked with the blasts from high-energy weapons. 100 meters beyond the trees was a maelstrom of fire as Halcyon's guns blasted Taunith's positions. But so far, no one seemed to have noticed the landing craft. Two now, because Irk's landed just beside Anakin's, and the clone infantry emerged to set up perimeter security. The ARC trooper blew open the door to the communications center, and followed closely by Anakin and Odie, dashed inside. It's about 40 meters from here to the main control room door, Odie shouted. Move fast, but keep a sharp lookout, Anakin ordered over the tactical communications net. Be sure of your targets before you shoot. No unnecessary fire.
He sprinted down the long corridor, followed by the rest of his force. The side corridors flashed by, but all seemed empty just now. As ordered, the clone sergeant began deploying his troopers. A corridor leading off to the left of the structure lay ahead, and the doors to the main control room were just beyond that. Anakin had his lightsaber out. He was a good 3 meters ahead of the fastest clone infantrymen when a battle droid popped around a corner and fired its weapon. The bolt hit the trooper behind the Jedi. Anakin disposed of the droid with one swift sweep of his lightsaber. But other battle droids, 6 or 8 of them, emerged and took up positions directly in front of the control room doors and immediately began firing. Odie, the clone troopers, and the two guards hit the deck, and the bolts lanced harmlessly over them, caroming off the walls and ceiling. None of them could fire back because Anakin was in the way. To Odie, lying on the floor watching him, he seemed at the center of a cyclone of blue light as his lightsaber whirled and slashed at the droids whose blaster bolts aimed directly at him at point-blank range, bounced off the high-energy blade, and tore into the walls and ceiling. In seconds, the droids were smoking piles of junk. Anakin leapt over the mess, brought his lightsaber down in one swift motion, burst open the doors to the control room, and stepped inside. The whole fight had taken only seconds, and to those behind him, watching, it seemed he had merely strolled through the droids and pushed open the doors. Odie and the others lay gasping and coughing on the floor behind him. The corridor was filled with a choking stench of vaporized droid metal and components. Anakin had already disappeared into the control room before she got to her knees and shouted, "Follow him!" The droids in the main control room had been given strict orders to guard the prisoners, so when Anakin appeared suddenly among them, his lightsaber flashing, it took several fatal seconds for any of them to recognize him as a threat. One fired directly at him, but it was as if Anakin knew the droid's intention even before it moved. With an almost casual sweep of his blade, he deflected the blaster bolt and cut the droid in two. Odie, coming through the ruined doors behind him, was horrified to see Anakin holding off 6 battle droids. Fortunately for her and the infantry troops who pounded in just behind, the droid's attention was all focused on the Jedi. To Odie, his movements were so fast that by comparison, the droid's defense was in slow motion. She knelt and fired at a droid in a far corner of the control room. The sergeant and his troopers took up shooting positions, but Anakin had so quickly dispatched the droids inside the control room that there were no opponents left for them to shoot at. "Secure the hostages," Anakin ordered. "Quickly, quickly! A counterattack is on the way!" Porz Tawnith, who up to this point had fought a brilliant defensive action, had made one big mistake, and that was moving the hostages into the main control room. He had done it to make guarding them easier, and he had never planned on an attempt to free them. Now he issued a fateful order. "Kill them! Kill them all!" Anakin stood in the center of the control room, surrounded by the steaming piles of debris that had been the hostages' guards. To Rage Amomen, who only moments before had been sitting dozing against the wall in the corner of the room, surrounded by her companions, the Jedi's arrival among them occurred in a burst of sound and fury so astonishing and unexpected that at first she couldn't grasp what was happening. The ARC trooper came up to her, offered her a hand, and said something. She got to her feet. Other clone troopers were helping her companions up and ushering them through the ruined doors. But Reja moved toward the solitary figure standing in the center of the room. The kiss she placed on Anakin's cheek came as a total surprise to him. In his mind, he knew the droid counterattack was almost on them, and he knew what direction it was coming from. He had been about to activate his lightsaber again when Reja kissed him. Without even knowing who was standing beside him, Anakin automatically put his arm around her shoulders and drew her close. She said something, and he smiled and looked down at her. What he saw in that brief instant was a profound flash of recognition. In this maelstrom of death and destruction, in this desperate situation with the enemy sweeping down on him, an escape a perilous possibility at best, Anakin Skywalker experienced peace. In that brief instant of the unexpected kiss,
A profound lassitude had come over him. He wished to lay his head on this woman's shoulder and rest. Just rest. Maybe sleep. Leave this nasty place. And not have to get up the next morning. What happened next would have consequences yet undreamed of. It was as if Anakin Skywalker were having an epiphany. In a microsecond, he saw what was coming and knew where it would lead him, but he was powerless to interfere. He felt like a headstrong and disobedient child being forced to sit still and watch a puppet show. A battle droid stepped into the room from the far side and leveled its blaster at Anakin. Reja Momin stepped in front of him just as the droid fired. The bolt, fired at low power, hit her squarely in the chest and slammed her back into Anakin. She didn't scream, didn't cry out, but her mouth formed a tiny O, and her eyes looked up at him, pleading. He held her under the arms and looked into those eyes and watched the life force drain out of them. Memories of his mother's death flooded him, and he felt the rage rise. The droid stood there staring at Anakin. It was as if it were waiting politely until Reja Momin was gone before it fired again. The control room was silent for a long moment, broken only by a repeated click, 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 as the droid impotently pulled the trigger of its blaster. Anakin was saved by poor maintenance. In that instant, he once again became an Avenger.
There are so many of them, Lieutenant Commander Vitroth said softly as he watched the enemy fleet slowly filling the Mandean screens. He turned to Captain Foth, who sat silently in his chair, fingers drumming softly on one arm, and said, I've never seen so many ships in one place before. The main fleet around Pre-Sitlin had been warned of the approaching danger. Now what? Everyone on board the Mandean wondered. Everyone but Captain Foth. Pretty impressive, isn't it? He commented. They were able to mask them until they got within range, sir, Vitroth said. I wonder how they did that.
The same way they blocked communications earlier. They've got the money to pay for research and development, Foth replied. Now we'll see how well they can fight. Enemy ships are within range, Captain, the gunnery officer announced. We are ready to open fire, sir. Belay that. Our job is to see and flee, and we are now going to flee. Helmsman, get us out of here.
The smell of Reja's hair still in his nostrils, Anakin reached deep into the Force. A sense of invincible power came over him, infusing him completely. Even during the desperate battle with the enemy tank droids and the attack on the hill, he had not experienced the Force as fully as it now flowed into him. In that instant, when he achieved total oneness with the Force, he knew he could do anything, and it felt good. All thought of his mission, retreating to the transports, evacuating the hostages, giving the signal to Najjar that would spell victory, evaporated. Follow me, he commanded the clone troopers.
Chaos reigned outside the building. Odie, assisted by Corporal Raiders and Private Vic, ushered the hostages into Urk's transport. She could see Urk in the cockpit giving the thumbs-up sign and smiling broadly. The Separatists, however, were now aware of their presence, and despite the continuing bombardment from the artillery, had sent the battle droid infantry against them. The clone troopers were engaging from their defensive perimeter. Urk's voice crackled in Odie's headset.
Good work. Get on board and let's get out of here.
We can't. The commander's still inside, Odie shouted back.
Come on, he can take care of himself. Get on board and let's get these people out of here.
As if to emphasize Urk's words, a stray blaster bolt skipped between Odie's legs and caromed off into the side of the building.
What's the holdup?
Raiders asked, running up to where Odie stood and looking up at Urk in his cockpit. The commander's still inside. We can't just leave him, Odie said.
Yes, we can, Raiders replied. Come on, mount up. You've done your job.
No!
She shook Raider's hand from her shoulder and stepped back, just avoiding a blaster bolt that sizzled past her nose.
I'm going back inside.
You're crazy,
Raiders cursed. You'll get us all killed standing out here. Vic ran up.
What's going on here?
He gasped.
They're closing in. Our line is collapsing. We've got to get the hostages out of here.
The deflective armor on Urk's transport had so far saved it from any serious damage. His power system was up and ready. He shook his head sadly and raised his ramp.
Good hunting,
he whispered, his voice cracking. His transport slowly began to move forward.
I guess it wasn't meant for us to spend our lives together.
In that instant, one of the enemy's heavy guns ranged on Anakin's ship, and it exploded in a brilliant cascade of flame. The concussion buffeted the three on the ground and knocked out the walls on the nearby building. But they were unhurt, and Urk's ship was away undamaged. The three looked at one another.
Thanks, Trooper. You've just effectively killed us all, Vic said bitterly.
Najal Halcyon sat as if transfixed. He knew the disturbance in the Force he was experiencing was a result of Anakin's tapping into it. He knew Anakin was still alive, but there was something troubling.
General, urgent report from Fleet.
A staff officer stood at Halcyon's elbow. He hadn't even been aware of the man's approach. Slake, who was standing nearby, smiled. He realized the Jedi Master had been absorbed in a reverie, and it amused him that even Jedi sometimes let their minds wander. Yet he also knew that Halcyon's reverie concerned Anakin, and that the Master was worried about him. Despite their former differences, Slake had come to respect, even like Halcyon. Halcyon sat bolt upright when he read the message just handed to him.
Listen up. A large enemy fleet is approaching.
Slake betrayed not even a twinge of emotion.
It's the relief fleet. Najah, we're now between a rock and a very hard place.
Yes, we are. Halcyon stroked his chin. What was happening on the Mesa? He turned back to the staff officer.
Have the fleet prepare for battle. Captain Slake, I will join the fleet. You take over here and...
General, the hostages are free, a communications officer reported. The shuttle commander has just reported in. Several officers applauded and broke into smiles.
Pipe him in so we can all hear his report, Halcyon ordered.
Anakin, is that you?
No, sir. Lieutenant Harmon here. Commander Skywalker is still in the communications center, and his shuttle has been destroyed. I have the hostages aboard and I'm bringing them in.
Good work, Lieutenant. Land at the resupply point and wait there for further orders.
Well, isn't this just great? Slake said. You can't fight that fleet and leave this enemy force behind here, Najah. I'm sorry, but you have to give the order to destroy the Mesa before our ships are fully engaged.
Halcyon turned to Slake. No, not yet. Let's wait a little.
Whatever you say, sir,
Slake answered. But it was evident he thought Halcyon had just made a fatally wrong decision. Anakin moved with the swiftness and brilliance of a burning sun. Droids rushed against him, their weapons firing indiscriminately. His lightsaber flashing in a blinding symphony of light and destruction, he parried the bolts effortlessly, sending some ripping through the walls and roof, others back into the very droids that had fired them. He wasn't defending now. He was attacking. Attacking with such fury and destruction that nothing could stop him. And he knew where he was going. He was headed for the enemy command post. The clone troopers following the Jedi had difficulty finding targets and stumbled over the debris he left in his passage through the complex. They merely followed in his wake, covering his back. Before long, he was outside the building and heading with unerring accuracy toward Porz Tawnit's bunker. It seemed as if Tawnit's entire army was firing at Anakin. But as he ran at full speed over the uneven ground that separated the communications facility from Tawnit's command bunker, not a single bolt touched him. Anakin set a thermal detonator at the base of the bunker's massive doors and took cover in a slight depression about 20 meters from them. He counted the seconds and was ready when the massive detonation erupted.
Even before the debris from the blast had settled, he was up and through the gaping hole. Inside the bunker, Pors Tawneth stood calmly, a cup of tea poised in front of his purple lips. They'd all felt the concussion of the thermal detonator when it went off, but Tawneth and his technicians had been unharmed by the blast. Several of the technicians made as if to flee for cover somewhere.
"Everyone stay at your station," he ordered. "We do not have the means to resist, and we shall not."
In seconds, all had fallen quiet. He sipped his tea. Anakin stepped into the control room, his clothing smoldering from near hits, his eyes blazing with fury. The technicians gasped and shrank away from the ghastly figure. Tawneth, however, merely gazed upon Anakin with a slight smile on his face.
"I surrender," Tawneth announced, smirking.
"I surrender to you, Jedi Knight."
He sipped the hot tea and smacked his lips.
"You have won, and I congratulate you." "Give the order for your troops to cease fire," Anakin rasped.
Tawneth nodded at the technicians, who were more than happy to communicate the ceasefire order to the droid commanders.
"My dear sir," Tawneth intoned, "I am now your prisoner, and claim for me and my sentient beings here and elsewhere on this position the status of prisoners of war."
He smiled, showing his stained teeth. Anakin was so fully filled with the Force that he was barely aware of himself. All he knew was the joy of the Force, a greater joy than he'd ever felt before. There was so much power in the Force, and all that power was his to do with as he would. He knew that, and he knew that the Ma'oon before him was the one who led the Separatist army that had attacked and occupied the Intergalactic Communications Center. Tawneth was the one who had commanded the forces that had wiped out General Kamar's army, that had killed most of Captain Slake's sons and daughters of freedom, the one who had brought the fight that killed so many of the clone troopers. This was the one who had given the order to the droid that had shot down Raja Momin in front of him. This poor Tawneth deserved to die, and Anakin Skywalker was the one to kill him. These technicians were traitors to the Republic who had aided Pors Tawneth in his murderous operation. They deserved to die as well. Let this vile, stained-toothed creature watch as his underlings died, so he would know his fate and fear before he died. Anakin Skywalker, filled with the Force, the agent of vengeance, raised his lightsaber and advanced toward the nearest technician. He stopped as a voice came unbidden into his mind.
"You must use the Force for good, Anakin."
Confused, he looked around. The voice sounded like that of Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan's Jedi Master. But Qui-Gon Jinn was dead.
"Master Jinn?" Anakin breathed.
"The Force is too strong to use for anything but good, Padawan. Remember that, and you can be the greatest Jedi of all."
Anakin stood unable to move for a long moment. Then he shook himself and severed his connection to the Force. Kneeling on the floor in front of him was a cowering form. Anakin realized he had been about to murder the hapless technician and shuddered. He glanced at the others, then turned to face Pors Tawneth.
"You are my prisoners," he choked out.
"I will take you back to Coruscant and hand you over to the Republic Senate for assignment to trial." Private Vic whistled when he led the others into Pors Tawneth's control room. Trooper Odi Subu looked up at the Ma'oon and asked, "Is he the one in charge?" Anakin, still breathing heavily, kept staring at Tawneth and didn't reply. For his part, Tawneth was no longer defiant. He'd become afraid of this young Jedi who'd captured him. He thought he was unbalanced and unpredictable.
"They've stopped fighting outside," Corporal Raiders announced.
Anakin gestured at Tawneth and the others. "All of these are our prisoners. Take charge of them, would you, Sergeant?"
take them to General Halcyon's to be locked up. The comm link installed on Anakin's wrist bleeped. He vaguely remembered it bleeping regularly as he'd fought his way to the bunker, but he ignored it at the time. Now he answered it.
Anakin!
It was Halcyon.
Is that you? Are you all right? The enemy has just stopped fighting. What's going on?
Master Halcyon, Anakin said tiredly. I'm fine. I'm in the control bunker with my troopers. I captured the Separatist commander and his staff. We're about to bring them to you.
That's a relief. Give your prisoners to the clone commandos to secure. I'm sending a transport to pick you up. The Separatist relief fleet is on its way, and I'm told it's a big one. I'm having our starfighters ferried down here at once. We've got a big fight on our hands, and I need you right away.
Only the technicians looked at Tawneth when he gave out an anguished wail. If only he'd been able to hold out for a few more minutes.
The Republic Fleet Commander had not been idle while Halcyon pursued the ground war against the Separatist forces on Precitlan. He had planned carefully for an attack like this. Several scenarios were considered, but it was decided that whatever tactic the enemy might use, the fleet would remain intact in order to concentrate and coordinate its combined firepower. If the enemy attacked by squadrons from different directions, the Republic fleet would take on each squadron in turn. If they attacked with their ships in line ahead, an attempt would be made to use superior speed to cross the enemy's line of advance and rake their ships with every weapon available. Whatever tactic was used, Halcyon's ships would be screened by his fighter fleet. But every battle plan became useless after the first shot is fired. The enemy commander chose to attack in a box formation with his flagship in the center, protected by his ships, and the fighters met in a wild melee between the two armadas. It's not always the number and size of the ships engaged that wins battles, but the way they are used. For this battle, Najal Halcyon chose to give over command of the fleet to Admiral Hopsquatch, while he led the fighter fleet against the enemy.
A fine ship, sir. The clone pilot who'd ferried Azure Angel 2 to the surface of Precitlan said as he helped Anakin to her cockpit.
Anakin smiled as he strapped himself in. He was in his true element now.
Thanks for bringing her down here, he said.
Anakin adjusted the mouthpiece to his headset and dialed in the frequency for ship-to-ship communications.
General Halcyon.
Anakin, won't you ever learn to use proper comm procedure?
Halcyon muttered.
You know the rendezvous point. Let's get there fast.
He glanced over his shoulder at Anakin's starfighter. He could just see the young Jedi through the cockpit. His airfoils were deployed. They'd be useful up to 20,000 meters. Already, Anakin's repulsor lift engines were raising a cloud of dust around Azure Angel 2. And as Halcyon watched, the machine gradually rose vertically from the ground. Anakin armed his blasters and proton torpedoes and engaged his IFF system. Gradually, he increased his airspeed. At 20,000 meters, he retracted his airfoils and engaged his sublights to obtain escape velocity.
Now, all the horror of the recently concluded ground combat faded away as he settled into the exhilarating world of high-speed, high-tech destruction, where pilots and machines disintegrated instantly in clean blossoms of flame, and pain and terror were endured only for milliseconds. He passed through the fleet without incident. 1,000 kilometers beyond, he got a visual on the fighter fleet. Beyond that, not yet within human eyesight, but already registering on his instruments, was the enemy.
I'm right on your six,
Halcyon announced.
General Halcyon, won't you ever learn to use proper comm procedure?
Anakin laughed.
Switch to the guard channel,
Halcyon ordered. He was serious now, and he was right to be. Anakin's instruments showed hundreds of blips fast approaching the enemy fighter screen. They were now in among their own fighter fleet ships. The plan agreed upon in advance was that an element of fighters led by Halcyon would head for the heart of the enemy fleet. The rest of the fighter arm would run interference. If the enemy chose to employ the same tactic, then a lot would depend on whose pilots were better. There was no doubt in Halcyon's mind whose were.
This is Halcyon 6. Follow me.
100 other fighters peeled off from the formation and followed him. The enemy commander chose to use his fighters to engage the Republic craft one-on-one. Anakin flashed through the fighters, guns blazing. He would save his missiles for the capital ships that lay just ahead. The enemy fighters zooming at him appeared as tiny points of light, which were their blaster cannons firing. As good as he was, Halcyon could barely keep up with the young Jedi pilot. And instead of leading the attack formation, in essence, he became Anakin's wingmate. In seconds, they were through the enemy fighter screen and in among the larger ships. Anakin concentrated on a destroyer looming just off his starboard wing. He flashed beneath the ship as its ion guns reached deadly fingers out at him, but he was moving too fast, almost 3,000 kilometers per hour, for even a warship's target acquisition system to get a bearing and range in time to hit him. He turned and approached the vessel from the stern, and as he started into a huge looping maneuver, fired a proton torpedo into its engines. The death of the destroyer would have been a beautiful sight to behold if Anakin had stayed around to witness it. Halcyon witnessed Anakin's attack, but then lost him in the melee. Other pilots had not been so successful, though some had. There were now conspicuous gaps in the enemy's formation. They had done what they came for.
This is Halcyon 6. Break off the fight. I repeat, break off.
Anakin heard the command, but now the Force was upon him again. He knew what he had to do. Ahead floated a massive vessel. The cloaking device the enemy was using could not obscure it entirely, and he knew it had to be the Separatist flagship. He roared straight in at what he assumed was the ship's bridge, but in the last fraction of a second before colliding, zoomed past it at 5,000 kilometers per hour. This time, the target was so huge that the extra split second it took him to pass her gave her gunnery system the opportunity to acquire him as a target. It was fortunate that the shot that got him was from a blaster cannon. Azure Angel 2's armor deflected most of the destructive force of the shot, but the damage was severe.
"I'm hit,"
he announced calmly. "How bad?" Halcyon asked.
"Get out of here,"
was all Anakin said in reply.
"Anakin!" "Get out of here,"
Anakin repeated. Halcyon realized that Anakin was about to put another shot up the ship's spout.
"Don't do it. You'll go up with her." "Say hello to the missus for me."
Anakin's voice was calm, well-measured. Even, Najah thought afterward, tinged with a slight flavor of wry humor.
"No, Anakin, no!"
The enormous blast from the destruction of the Separatist flagship decisively tilted the odds toward the Republic's forces by engulfing many of the enemy ships unlucky enough to be in the vicinity. It also engulfed Anakin Skywalker. The dust had hardly settled from Halcyon's landing before Zoe's Rider Slick and the entire army staff were running toward him, before even the maintenance droids had trundled out to service the craft. Halcyon popped the canopy and breathed the hot, dry air of Presidlin. Slick and another officer climbed up on the wing and reached helping hands into the cockpit. Halcyon needed the assistance to get out.
"Brilliant! Wonderful! The enemy fleet is in disorder and withdrawing. Your troops are dismantling the droids. A complete victory. Sir, I never thought I'd live to see such a stunning success."
Slake pounded Halcyon on the back with one hand as he steadied him with the other.
"Not me. It was Anakin,"
Halcyon croaked. He held up a hand to silence the crowd.
"Commander Skywalker, at the cost of his own life, destroyed the enemy flagship and turned the tide for us. And it was Anakin who captured the brains behind the droid army."
He paused and shook his head.
"You and me, Captain. Compared to him, we're just a couple of old, used-up dish rags in this business of war."
The crowd had gone still.
"I knew the lad had it in him," Slake said, breaking the silence.
He put an arm around Halcyon's shoulders and gently led him through the crowd that closed in behind them as they walked slowly back toward the command post.
"How would you like Pluriad Bodkin back, General?"
Slake asked.
Halcyon stopped and pretended to think it over. No, Captain, you earned her. Maybe not square, but fair. She's in good hands now. He put his own arm around Slake's shoulders. They continued toward the bunker. Someone's coming in for a landing, someone announced. He looked toward the horizon, shading his eyes with a hand. An aircraft is coming in, sir, he reported. It looks like a Delta 7 Aether Sprite. They all looked up at the sky. Yes, it's a Delta 7, Halcyon said. As it got bigger and bigger, coming in for a landing, he stiffened. It couldn't be. Do you recognize that starfighter? He turned to Slake. Slake shrugged.
Looks pretty beat up to me. One of yours from the fleet, I suppose.
Halcyon began to run toward where the fighter was preparing to land. The incoming Delta 7 hovered in its vertical mode and gradually settled down, raising a thick cloud of dust that billowed out to engulf the bystanders. The canopy was pitted and scorched, so they couldn't see the pilot. The fuselage was blackened, and most of the paint so badly scored, it was hard to determine the original colors. The two blaster cannons on the starboard side of the craft were missing entirely.
It's him, Halcyon whispered, gripping Slake by an arm. It's him!
He pointed at the partially destroyed podracer symbol just aft of the cockpit.
It's Anakin! How could this be?
He broke into laughter and began thumping Slake on the back. Slake looked at Halcyon as if he'd lost his mind.
But you told us.
No, no! I was wrong. This is Anakin's Azure Angel 2. I'd know it anywhere.
He let go of Slake's arm, rushed forward, and climbed onto the ship's airfoil. He banged mightily on the cockpit canopy, and the next instant, the canopy popped off. The pilot removed his helmet and grinned up at the two commanders looming over him.
Hi, Master Halcyon, Captain Slake, Anakin said, extending a hand. Give me a lift out of here, would you?
Would you mind telling us how you did that? Halcyon asked. They sat in the command post, Anakin with his legs spread out before him and a huge, almost empty container of water at one elbow. He ran a grimy hand through his hair.
Well, you know I always tinker with machines.
I rigged Azure Angel 2 to give her a hyperspace capability. Just something I cooked up, he shrugged. At the last instant, just before the missile detonated, I engaged the drive and jumped free. He snapped his fingers. Piece of cake.
Sir,
an officer asked, just how did you know when to disengage? Anakin stood up, drained the last of the water, and wiped the drops from his lips with the back of his hand. The same way I always knew what the ground was like before I could see it when I was pod racing. He shrugged.
It must be the Force.
Sir? Urk stepped out of the circle surrounding Anakin. Odie came up to stand beside him.
We'd like to ask you for a favor, sir. I'll grant you to any wish I have it in my power to grant, Anakin replied. You name it.
Well, sir, I need a wingmate. I need someone I can rely on. You know how it is, zooming through the combats of life. A man can do just so much by himself, and he needs someone to watch his six.
You see, Commander Skywalker, Odie interrupted, would you marry us?
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Jedi Trial by David Sherman and Dan Cragg. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Jedi Trial is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2004. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2004, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio presentation. All rights reserved.